sins of any. They are retained. But Thomas, who was called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands and put my finger in the mark of the nails and my hand in his side, I will not believe." A week later, the disciples were again in the house, and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were shut, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Do not doubt, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have come to believe." Now, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing, you may have life in his name. The Gospel of the Lord. I'd like to call your attention to the back of the worship bulletin for today. It tracks some of the key words that weave themselves through Jesus' resurrection appearances in John chapter 20, especially the words of seeing and believing. You might think of yourselves as math teachers and that chart is showing you my homework, and so you can decide what you think as we go along. John's gospel speaks to a basic Easter issue. Not everyone gets a direct encounter with the risen Jesus. After Mary Magdalene meets the risen Jesus, after the group of disciples meets the risen Jesus, after Thomas meets the risen Jesus, and who knows why Thomas wasn't there the first time, the gospel's narrator pauses to address us. Those of us who hear the gospel secondhand. For Jesus performed many other signs, the narrator says, that are not recorded in this gospel, but these have been written for us, so that believing, we may have life in Jesus' name. And so it is with Jesus' conversation with Thomas, for Thomas demands to see the risen Jesus, to explore Jesus' wounded body. He will not compromise. He must see in order to believe. Jesus obliges him. But even Jesus' words seem directed not to Thomas, but to us. "Have you believed because you've seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe." It's a basic issue, and one I'm afraid we have to accept, that Christian faith is, in a profound sense, secondhand faith, is it not? We enter faith tentatively, receiving the story of Jesus through people we love and trust. We venture to own it, to respond to it. Some of us think we choose to do so, others feel as if God chooses us. But few of us can say we've experienced the risen Jesus with our eyes. Thus the question, is Easter faith necessarily secondhand faith? So let's reset the story. Mary has arrived at the tomb, having seen the stone rolled away. She runs to Peter and the other disciple, the disciple Jesus loves, we're told, and reports. Peter and the beloved disciple run to the tomb. Beloved disciple gets there first. He sees Jesus' grave cloths, but allows Peter to run to the tomb ahead of him. Peter sees basically the same thing. The other disciple then enters. He sees the empty tomb and the grave cloths. And the beloved disciple becomes the first to believe. But the beloved disciple doesn't tell Mary. She stands outside, distressed when she encounters the risen Jesus. She's seen two angels. She's explained to them what's going on, but then she sees Jesus. And Mary is the first to see the risen Jesus. But she doesn't know who he is. Not, that is, until Jesus calls her name. And after this encounter with the risen Jesus, Mary runs to the disciples, and what does she say? I have seen the Lord. Mary sees one set of things and comes to believe eventually. Peter sees another set of things, and yet he remains confused. The beloved disciple sees the same things Peter sees, does not yet encounter the risen Jesus, and yet he believes. The story is all about seeing and believing and seeing and not believing and seeing just enough to believe. All this is going on before the risen Jesus sneaks into that closed room. All this before, as the Gospels say, the disciples rejoiced when they saw the Lord. One of the joys of my position here at Holy Trinity is the blessing of accompanying you on your spiritual journeys. I get more free breakfasts, free coffee, free lunches. You'd think I was in corporate purchasing. And there are the Academy of Lay Ministry conversations, right, where I hear your questions and I wonder about the questions you choose not to ask. I hear you trying to make sense of your lives, whether your faith is strong enough, whether you believe the right things, or whether you're foolish to believe the things you do believe. Apparently, I'm not very good at my job because one of you recently told you, I come to see you with a question and you give me more questions. And we're all so different. Some of us are engineers, accountants, doctors. For those of you, there's usually one right or maybe one best solution for every problem. Do this or that and the outcome's predictable. My dad's an engineer. Lord help me, my dad's an engineer. And it's been a long time since he actually designed a process, but he thinks like an engineer. One way is more efficient. One way generates less pollution. One way generates more useful byproducts you can sell to somebody else down the line. And the other ways, well, they're more expensive. They produce inferior products. They're dangerous. In chemical engineering, do it the wrong way, and you just might kill somebody. So engineers can be pretty serious about this kind of stuff. Always liked visiting the lab where my dad works. And I brought my daughters there when they were little. Very impressive. Electron microscope, all kinds of gizmos around. And this research chemist hands my daughters this little strip of polyester resin, the kind of stuff from which you can make a fishing boat or bowling ball or marble, faux marble countertop. Hands them this strip and says, would you like to see how we test how strong it is? Oh, yeah, you know, their eyes open wide. Who doesn't want to see that? And so in this lab with the electron microscope and the spectrometers and all that stuff, the chemist puts the strip on a little steel column, presses a button, bam! 1,000-pound steel column drops on it. Presses another button, whirr, the steel column goes up. And there's the strip of polyester resin completely intact, and looks at my daughters and says, strong enough. If you want a polyester resin that'll hold up to years of bass fishing, call the chemist and the engineer. If you want a picture of children that will open your heart to their wisdom, a song that will change the way you experience loneliness? A poem that will speak to your experience of divorce more profoundly than you've been able to? If you want those kinds of things, don't ask my dad. Just don't. The joy of getting to know you is that you're also different. You approach faith in your own ways. You bring different life experiences, and then you bring different questions. You bring different values. And some of us we find are very much alike. And some of us figure out how to like each other anyway. And that process is a source of great joy. The author of the first epistle of John, way back toward the end of the New Testament, clearly knew today's gospel lesson. And the rest of John's gospel as well. He writes, "That which was from the beginning, which we have seen with our own eyes, which we've looked upon and touched with our own hands concerning the word of life, that which we have seen and heard, we proclaim also to you. That which we've seen, that which we've touched." Do you suppose the author has Thomas in mind? You can almost hear Thomas saying on that very night after Jesus' resurrection, "Unless I see the marks of the nails in his hands, unless I stick my finger in the mark of the nails and stick my hand in his side, I will not believe." Thomas, perhaps an engineer with a Lehigh degree, isn't going to believe unless he actually feels Jesus' wounds. He wants to see the nail prints in Jesus' hands. He wants to feel the wounds in his hands and side. Thomas' language is unusual. It's even violent. Literally, he wants to drive his finger into the nail holes and thrust his hand into Jesus' side. And we can lay aside the gory details. We don't have to go where the History Channel goes with special effects so you can see through Jesus' hands. To give the impression, right? We don't have to go there. But as we attend to the story, we do notice something. Jesus speaks directly to Thomas. And Jesus invites Thomas, "Go ahead. Stretch out your finger. Extend your hand. Explore my wounds," Jesus says, "that which we have seen, which we've touched." Jesus offers Thomas the opportunity to do exactly what Thomas said he wanted to do. But look at the story. For the story refuses to tell us. We don't know whether Thomas actually reached out to touch Jesus or not. Jesus invites Thomas to reach out and touch, and Thomas replies, "My Lord, my God." Thomas sees and believes. Whether he touched, we're not so sure. Perhaps we've been a bit too tough on Thomas. Doubting Thomas, we call him, right? As if Thomas were the only character in the Easter story who has problems with believing. As if we have fewer problems believing than Thomas does. Now, the beloved disciple, now that's a disciple, right? This guy, do you notice, he outran Peter to the tomb. This guy comes to faith simply by seeing the empty tomb and the abandoned grave cloths, and he believes right away. Doesn't even need to see Jesus, and he believes. But Mary sees the stone rolled away, and she's confused. She sees the body is missing, and she is distressed. She even encounters the risen Jesus. She's the first to do so, is she not? She encounters the risen Jesus, but she doesn't recognize him. Mary sees a lot of things before she comes to faith. And Peter sees the same things the beloved disciple sees, but Peter doesn't arrive at faith. In other words, Thomas is maybe slower than some, maybe quicker than others. He wants to see and touch before he will believe. Maybe we've been too tough on Thomas. And in being tough on Thomas, are we not too hard on ourselves? Is just one kind of faith superior to all others? Do we prefer quick faith, the sort of faith that trusts everybody, over Thomas' determination to see for himself? Are we suspicious of believers who need experience, a touch, a mystical encounter, whatever, in order to believe? What mistakes are we making when we measure faith? As if one kind of faith counts more than others. As if more faith is superior to faith that transforms character and spirit. So I wonder if we're too hard on Thomas. I remember Mother Teresa, who accepted the Nobel Peace Prize for her work among the poor in Calcutta. And my friends who have visited Calcutta assure me that the poverty there is spirit-crushing, just overwhelming. And she, Mother Teresa, weathered that poverty and performed steadfast, faithful ministry there. She inspired millions around the globe. But did you know, many of you do, that Mother Teresa struggled in her spiritual life? She simply did not feel full of faith or particularly close to God. To one spiritual advisor, she wrote, "Jesus has a very special love for you. But as for me, the silence and the emptiness is so great that I look and do not see, listen and do not hear. The tongue moves in prayer but does not speak. I want you to pray for me that I let God have a free hand." Silence and emptiness. A tongue moving in prayer but failing to speak. Do we judge Teresa as harshly as we do Thomas? Or do we acknowledge that God graces us in different ways? Maybe we're too hard on Thomas. Seeing, touching, feeling, believing. How do these things all work out? This Easter season, the high season for being confident, we grow anxious when our faith doesn't fit. We see others who at least act confident in their believing. I said act confident. And wonder if there's something wrong with ourselves because deep down we just don't fit that mold. I can't tell you how many of you have shared with me some anxiety or another that your faith isn't as sure as you'd like for it to be. How many of you feel inadequate to share your opinions because you don't know the Bible well enough or your theology isn't well informed? And of course, that's why we do adult education ministries, is to equip all of us to perform the ministry of the church. But hear the good news of the gospel. The risen Jesus lives for all of us. And he encounters his followers in different ways. I invite you to go home and read these last two chapters, chapters 20 and 21 of John, and note the different ways in which Jesus' followers meet the risen Jesus. Some of them, having already seen him once, still don't recognize him when they see him again. And yet the risen Jesus lives for all of us, and in his own way, he makes himself known to us despite what we know, how we learn, or how we come to believe. And friends, hear the good news again. Faith belongs to God. We do not own our own faith. We cannot take credit for it. None of us, not one, is faithful apart from the gifts that God bestows upon us. God is not stingy. God is not sitting somewhere waiting for us to please God somehow. but through the risen Jesus, God is right here present among us, granting faith in God's own way and according to God's own measure. So hear this good news. The risen Jesus is here for all of us. Thanks be to God.